Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Closer to Death, the conversation with Joe Pieri. The world of paranormal investigative work has been going through an evolution since its inception. From disembodied voices being heard over the original telephone line, to analog recording, to parts from modern video game machines being used to capture the presence of the dead, the space between the living and the beyond continues to thin. Just how clear will that threshold become? That's what we talk about today with paranormal investigator Joe Pieri.
It's funny you say, I'm going to date myself on this now. It started back in high school with me when we had to graduate from high school. We had to write a thesis and we had to apply it to a library. And we had mentors throughout the year. And my mentor was my science teacher. We had a nickname for him. We used to call him Einstein because he had enormous red hair that he never combed, and he believed in just let it flow because it wasn't important. The important thing to him was just learning about science. He didn't care about anything else. He was my mentor. It happened in May when I was kind of in a pickle. I couldn't think what I wanted to do, and he told me to think outside the box. Don't give me a thesis that's based on anything that we studied in school, if you want to do like a literature or mathematics. He goes, I want you to think outside the box. And I always had a fascination with the paranormal, the odd and unusual, mediumship, the abilities of what our brains are capable of doing and what we're only allowing it to do. So I decided to do it on the paranormal, the odd and unusual. Wow. It took me about 30 days to write the paper. Mm-hmm. And when it was complete, my science professor approached me and said that he enjoyed the paper, but he just couldn't let me get in front of a class of 300 people and explain why I wrote this paper. He says, you'll be labeled and you don't want that. You're going into college now. You don't need this on your back. I agreed with him. But he did approach me and say, if you're really this interested in it, I do. He told me that he did paranormal research. He investigated it. And he took me on my very first investigation at the age of 17. I was hooked from day one. I found it to be amazingly fascinating just because of the point. It was different. It wasn't the usual. We went in with tactics that are now called old school, and I enjoyed it. We actually got to witness something that night too, and from that moment on, all the way through college, afterwards, all the way up to this point, I've been in the paranormal. I believe I've been in the spiritual, the odd and unusual. I even like oddities. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating adventure. Do I have any regrets? Absolutely not. I think I've lost some family members and friends along the way, but you know, that comes with the territory. I don't think that they think I'm weird. I just think that they're afraid of it. They don't want to be associated with it. They're involved with the Hollywood aspect of things, like voodoo. If you stick a pin in, you're going to hurt somebody. That's not the case. And it's the same thing with the paranormal, odd and unusual.
Sure. So when you have this fascination, you write this paper, you start digging into it. What sort of background did you have? Did you have experiences in childhood or anything? Or was it just more so, this is interesting, I want to find out more about this?
I did have something when I was a child, but I think 90% of the people in this field had something like that.
Sure.
I don't know if it was a dream or it was real. I did see a shadow mass leaning over my sister when she was sleeping in bed. I didn't know what it was, but when I called out for it, it sprung up and vanished. And that was the beginning of it. But other than that, I think I was the type that loved the fall, the leaves blowing, the scary stories, stuff that's unusual, like don't go into this room because it's haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the guy that would say, oh, I have to go into this room now.
Yeah.
And it was the oddball in the class. I wasn't into, you know, the typical stuff where people were getting excited about the prom. I was getting excited about building a paranormal team, building paranormal gear at the time.
Sure.
And it's just who I am. I love the research end of things. I think that's more fascinating to me than actually seeing the entity. To build a history case onto something, I can go on and on about all of my point of views of the paranormal, but the number one thing for me has to be just the diehard research, not to prove, just so I know. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a personal journey at this point, and it's funny because someone had asked me yesterday, well, you know, are you getting tired of proving the paranormal?
Mm-hmm.
And I replied, I think I'm past that. I'm more about the experiences now. It's more of a personal journey. I'm over 50 years old now. I'm on the back nine, so of my life, and that's where I am at this point. Now, for the younger generation, geez, I always say, open up, let it roll, try to prove it. We laid the roadwork down. It's clear and free. It's time for you to take the journey, and hopefully, they can discover what the truth is about all this.
What was your mission at first when you started digging into this in a serious outlook?
I'm going to have to say to prove it. Back in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't like today where some people are looking to get a TV show or something like that. It was more of helping an individual. So if you got a call from someone saying they're experiencing this, you didn't advertise what you were going to do. You rolled in real quiet. And it was helping the people. It was putting their minds to rest. Hopefully, we didn't use the word debunk. We were trying to prove or disprove the mm-hmm. type of hauntings that they were experiencing. And I'll be honest with you, 85% of what we investigated, we were able to lay down, you know, a list saying it's not paranormal. This is what we believe it is. And it's kind of rewarding when it comes to that point because you can see the stress just drain out of the people.
Mm-hmm. When you had said that you did have something, you weren't sure if it was a dream or if it was something. Can you expound upon that in your childhood experience as to kind of that spark? I'd be interested in hearing what that experience was exactly, whether or not you view it as truly paranormal or just something that really, you know, kind of sparked you.
I was a young boy. At that time, you don't know what you're seeing.
Sure.
But when I was, I don't know, I was very protective of my sister. And when I saw this figure, and it had no definition to it, and I think that's what startled me the most. It didn't look like my parents. It didn't look like an actual human. It just looked like if someone were to take like a plastic garbage bag that's maybe 8 feet tall and drape it on a hanger. That's what I saw. It was something like that, but it was bent over my sister. My sister was sound asleep, but it was within a couple of feet of her face.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this, I was really concerned, and I remember sitting up looking at it and saying, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And it sprung up so fast, and it looked like it actually shrunk down and shot up and disappeared. It's a very, if it was a dream, and I remember it this clearly, God, I wish I can still dream like that. I just can't prove that it was something real. Because, again, I was young. A young mind can wander, but it seemed to have left a very strong imprint on me.
Sure. When you look back on this now, I mean, it almost sounds, you know, as what we would describe as like a shadow type person. What do you view it as in hindsight?
I'm going to have to agree with you. I think what we look at as a shadow person today, it's very close to what I saw. It was dark in certain areas, and it was cloudy in others. I mean, a shadow figure to me is something that absorbs energy.
Mm-hmm.
It absorbs light. That's why we get that shadow effect.
Sure.
And I'm going to have to classify it probably as a shadow person. Back then, I just called it the black bag that hovered over my sister.
Sure. No, I mean, and when you're a kid, I mean, it's not like, shadow person is in the regular, vernacular. It's like, hey, today on Sesame Street, the letter B and shadow people. It wasn't exactly how we were taught. As that being an experience, you get deeper and deeper into this. Let's talk about, some of the old school versus new school ways of looking at paranormal investigation. When you started to get into it in the 80s and 90s, and we're digging deeper and deeper. Paint the picture for people. I mean, there's a lot of folks. It amazes me because it makes me feel older. I'm nearing the 40 mark, but you have some of the young folks in their late teens, early 20s who are diving into it, who know no world other than having ghost boxes and all the more modern type equipment. Paint the picture. Explain to us. I mean, I know, but explain to the audience what the world was like back then in terms of trying to get into investigating the paranormal, trying to find evidence. What were some of the more compelling things that you would do or use and tactics of the day?
Sure. In the 80s, we didn't investigate at night. I'm not sure where that came into play. I'm guessing around the late 90s, early 2000s, about the night thing. We would arrive at a home approximately about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and we would sit with the family with pure daylight, and we would charge the people back in the 80s due to the fact that the cost of having a roll of film developed, we used to call it, you want a 12, 24, or 36 investigation. And what that meant is, how many pictures do you want us to take and have developed for you?
Okay.
How many cassette recorders do you want? Do you want 1 hour? Do you want 2 hours? Do you want 3 hours of recordings?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, where we didn't have the night vision capabilities. We didn't sit in the dark because we wanted to see what was there. We wanted to use the VHS tapes that we had the big clumpy camera with. We wanted to experience the paranormal. It's kind of fascinating from today. Back then, an EMF detector didn't exist.
Sure.
Ghostbusters in 1984 gave us, I think, the first EMF detector by the thing that opened up.
Sure.
And I think everyone started mild with that. But in 86 to 89, we didn't have anything like that. We would use a compass. A compass is based on the same theory as electromagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
But they would disrupt the magnetic field. There's no electrical power to it, just the magnetic field. And the needle wouldn't spin around. It would just start to bob up and down. So if you had a good 4-inch compass sitting on the table in front of you and you're explaining to the spirits how to use it, how to communicate, and they would actually pick that up pretty easy because they would just approach it and you would see the needle bob up and down.
Mm-hmm.
I actually still use some of this stuff because, again, I'm in my 50s. It's hard for me to break away from the stuff that I know that works.
Sure.
And I mean, if you're talking on an old cassette recorder, you're 30 minutes each side. You can never reuse that tape. And a lot of people say, well, didn't you get the noise of the mechanics of the recorder? Absolutely. But you would have extended microphones. Depending on the society you were with, if it was a university, which most paranormal societies resided in, they would have a certain amount of funding to experiment with unusual findings. And they would invest in the cameras. They would invest in maybe a little bit more of a reel-to-reel cassette
mm-hmm.
player. But you're carrying this 40-pound item into a home, looping up some reels and recording on that. Back in the 80s, and it all started in the 70s with the reel-to-reel. But in the 80s, they went to the mini cassettes. So it was a little bit more affordable. But the group that I was associated with was with the University of Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some pretty decent gear. And it's, to me, analog, I still think is better than digital. Digital is a processing. It records your voice, it digitalizes, it puts it on the flash drive, and you're done. Analog is actually embedded into the tape itself.
Mm-hmm.
You get a better response through analog. I believe you do. That's why Hans Holzer used to use the reel-to-reel all the time. He believed in analog. And even up to 2009 when he passed, he still believed in analog recordings.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.